for the opportunity to speak at this very nice meeting, even if there is a slightly Alice in Wonderland quality to it, as in unbirthday meeting. So following plenty of other people, I guess I'll try and finish early. Seems to be the standard. So I don't want to try and do too much, but let me say, all I want really to do is to state and prove the Atiyah-Singer index theorem. Well, I'll come pretty close to stating and proving this. Of course, there's one thing that I've learned, maybe the only thing I've really learned from Victor over the years, is that in the interest of clarity, one should not be afraid of lying. Okay, so not only will I talk about the index, so of course what I'm going to talk about, the point of my talk, what I want to try and show you is that if one thinks not quite in the original way, but if one thinks semi-classically, then in fact this theorem is not very hard. That's what I want to try and convince you of. In fact, so what's the point of making it easier? Well, the point is that we can then do a three twisted version. So whether I really get to this point, remains to be seen. I don't really want to try and steal any time from Denny. So if I should get this far, then this is relatively recent. Some of it, in fact, so recent it's non-existent, work with Mattei and Singer. But let me spend some time trying to show you at least an approach to the index theorem, which is relatively, I hope, elementary. So first, what is the index theorem about? Let's see here. So the whole point, of course, about the index theorem is it's all about pseudo-differential operators acting on some manifold. Shlomo has convinced us, of course, that we should talk about superbundles. So from sections of one bundle to sections of another bundle over a compact manifold, the family's index really is about vibrations. I have to talk about vibrations. But first thing I want to show you is that although much as it pains me, we don't really have to talk about this to discuss the index. Okay? So instead of this, I want to talk about something much simpler, for which I'll use the same notation, but these are smoothing operators. So in fact, all I really want to talk about for quite some time are smoothing operators. So let's say initially just on some manifold. Okay, so we probably all know what smoothing operators are, but let me just remind you, I guess probably Schwartz was the first one to make this very clear. Suppose we think about operators, say, on some manifold. For the moment, I'll take X to be compact. A little while later, I'll forget about that, but let's just... So if we think of operators which are as good as operators can be, they turn everything into smooth functions, all distributions into smooth functions. They're not smoothing operators if they do that, unless their adjoint does the same thing. So these are smoothing operators, and Schwartz showed that this is equivalent. It was probably known before anyway. This is equivalent to A being represented by a smooth kernel. So there's an issue about densities, which I will ignore, of course. And so this is the Schwartz kernel. So I use the same letter for the operator and for the Schwartz kernel. The operator is given by integral against the kernel. And because there's a density hidden in here, you don't have to integrate. Okay, so these are smoothing operators, if you like. Oh, boy. You get your exercise here. And so one way of thinking about smoothing operators, if you like to think in terms of non-commutative geometry, that it turns this very commutative space, C infinity of x squared, you have to put the density into it, it gives this a non-commutative product, where the product is the obvious composition formula. I'll write it down because I will use this a little bit later on, perhaps. So this is the non-commutative product. Of course, you really should have densities in there, and then this all makes sense. Now, it's in fact a non-commutative space, and as a space, it's simple. I mean, as an algebra, it's simple in the technical sense, namely, as a non-commutative space, it's really more like a point. It's extremely non-commutative, maximally non-commutative. Okay, so we all agree on what smoothing operators are. So let me just remind you of a fact about smoothing operators. So I'll put this here, you know, in the forbidden place, so that there's some possibility that it'll be here later on when I want to look at it. So why are smoothing operators, why do they have any interest, even vaguely, in some differential topological issue like this? Well, one nice theorem, elementary and well known, is that if we look at the operators, well, I'll write it this way. So the identity is very much not a smoothing operator, whatever it is. So we look at perturbations of the identity, which are invertible. So A is a smoothing operator. And we're assuming that this is invertible. Not A is invertible, but identity plus A is invertible. A can never be invertible. So the set of invertible perturbations of the identity, this is a classifying space for odd K theory. Well, if you want to be technical, you would say that. I'll just say that. So what does this mean? It means that if you wanted to compute the K theory, as I'll want to do, of any space, any reasonable space, say some compact Hausdorff space, but let's say a manifold, since that's all I'm really interested in, it's just the homotopy classes of maps into G minus infinity of X. It's independent of X. Well, of course, the dimension of X has to be positive. Apart from that, and it should be connected. Apart from that, it's always true. So these things really are independent of X. There's no topology in X left in these spaces. And so it's the same as if you took Rn and Schwarz functions on Rn, for example. Okay, so this observation I want to use in a little minute. Okay. So that's smoothing operators. And so these are normally considered sort of the throwaway operators in most analytic problems. So now I want to talk about the semi-classical algebra. So everyone's been talking about semi-classical operators. Let me actually define them. Well, the first observation is that since this space of smoothing operators, so here, remember, I'm really saying psi minus infinity of x is basically equal to, so this is a trivial line bundle which doesn't make any sense. So the first thing is rather, it's of course obvious what you mean by smooth maps into smoothing operators. Smooth maps from any space, I mean, since this is in fact C infinity of x squared, a smooth map from a space into that is just a smooth function on the product of the space with that. So there's no question about what you mean by smooth. And so here I'll use epsilon, well, somehow the very limited physical background I had always stops me making h bar go to zero. But epsilon can go to zero. Okay, so this is not semi-classical, this is just smoothing operators depending smoothly on a parameter. So what do we mean by the semi-classical algebra? So I'll try and define this precisely. Let me take a few minutes to actually define this precisely. Semi-classical of X. It's not a space of operators on X, despite my minimal notation. It's a subspace, so it's a space of smoothing operators on X depending on a parameter. So for epsilon positive, they're just smooth families of smoothing operators. And what we're interested in is what happens as epsilon goes to zero. So nothing is happening for epsilon positive. So as epsilon goes to zero, we can put two conditions on it. So as epsilon goes to zero, we want to pose conditions. Let me put it first, just describe them locally, and then secondly, I'll describe the same conditions globally, where you can rather easily see what's happening globally. So first off, so here we have the kernel. So the kernel is a function of epsilon, a function of two variables in x. So these are each variables in x. And so the first condition we want is that away from the diagonal, this should actually be C infinity, and I'll write it in the following abbreviated form. So away from the diagonal, it's C infinity, and in fact it vanishes to infinite order as epsilon goes to zero. So away from the diagonal, the thing just disappears completely. It's a smoothing operator, uniformly smooth down to epsilon equals zero, and disappears completely. So nothing happens there. And so the crucial thing is near the diagonal, this diagonal, of course, x equals y, then our smoothing operator, our family of smoothing operators, has this very particular form. It can be rewritten as epsilon x, x minus y over epsilon, and epsilon to the minus n, where n is the dimension of x. This is essentially a density factor here itself, but so we're allowing epsilon to the minus n. This is now a smooth function, which, so this is now C infinity down to epsilon equals zero. It's not really in the whole of the manifold. This is an open neighborhood around some point x bar, and this is actually in Rn, and I'll say it's Schwartz. So it's now completely smooth in all variables, and it's Schwartz in this variable here, z. So this condition, so this is in any local coordinates near a point in the manifold. So of course this condition might worry you. You might ask, is it coordinate independent? What does it really mean? And so forth. Well, fortunately, we can easily describe the same thing globally. So let me just write down the same definition globally. No. It's pretty close because, but you know, I mean, in other words, it's probably true if you put t to the half. I mean, yeah, t equal epsilon squared. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So globally, let me just draw a picture, which is why I'm not trying to do this thing on a computer because I find it very hard. Let's say, so let's just try and draw a picture here. This is epsilon. This thing is x squared. And of course, we have this nice submanifold of x squared, which is the manifold. Of course, we know where pseudo-differential operators somehow are concentrated. This is the diagonal. And so this is the manifold with boundary, of course, the boundary just being epsilon equals zero. And we can geometrically blow up this diagonal. So this is a well-defined geometric process. Blow up the diagonal, which just means introduce polar coordinates around each point of the submanifold systematically. So I'll try. So what it looks like, of course, then is we look like we have a channel cut out. Let me draw it in red since it's the replacement for the diagonal. It looks like we've cut out a channel at epsilon equals zero. I don't know whether that picture is comprehensible enough. As I was telling someone the other day, I did get an F minus in art in high school. Okay, so this is a well-defined process. In other words, this manifold is a well-defined manifold. This is a well-defined smooth map, and this is just normal polar coordinates. But it's completely coordinate independent, as is well known. I mean, of course, it's better known in the algebraic setting, but in the real setting, perfectly. Okay. And so what our kernels look like here is just, so A tilde is just C infinity function here, that the definitions up here are exactly that it's a C infinity function, which is flat here, and smooth up to this additional face, and non-zero here. So the Schwartz behavior is the fact that as you approach this boundary from this boundary, the thing is, the kernel is vanishing rapidly. Okay, so this is the smallest reasonable algebra or notion of semi-classical operators. So the main points about semi-classical operators is that they form an algebra. So this is easy to prove. Should I prove it, Victor?
Sure.
Okay. Well, so we can see, I mean, so it's easy. Let me at least show you that it's easy. Of course, I didn't prepare it, so we'll see how I do. But we know what the composition is, A epsilon. AB, the composite of AB. So there's an epsilon, there's X, Y. I mean, the composition is, of course, the same as the composition okay, and now I just have to change variables. So I now will put, I'll change variables here. So I have two epsilon to the minus n's, one from there, one from there. When I do this, I just get here, I think I said x minus y. And here I get y minus z. So this is the definition on the right-hand side. And of course, I want to compute the corresponding kernel on the left-hand side. X minus Y. Sorry? Oh, Z minus Y. Yeah, okay. Ah, well, if you expect me to get the signs right, you're being very optimistic. So, I mean, if you change variables here, so what we need, what we want to do is we want to make recover here the kernel for the composite. So this is supposed to be epsilon to the n times a b at epsilon x. We have to basically, so we have to set here y. So we want to set x minus y over epsilon equals y. So we want to set y equals x minus epsilon y. So here we want to say, so this, so let's say we can write down this formula. Let me write down the formula directly here. One of the epsilons, the n's, is cancelled off by the one on the right-hand side. So this is x minus z over y. Nothing much we can do about that, so we just set this equal to z. Z. So there's an implicit dz in here, b tilde epsilon z, and then, so I have to work out what this is, so let's just cheat here, so I'm not going to try and do it, let me just say what you get, something like this. So here we'll get something like y, I mean it's x plus epsilon y, or something or other like that. So this change of variable here absorbs that, and you get this formula, and you can see that this is a completely convergent integral because everything's Schwartz, and you can also see something that's rather obvious here, which is when you set epsilon equals zero, this is merely convolution in this variable. So at epsilon equals zero, this composition becomes convolution, and that gives us the main theorem about the semi-classical algebra, which is that it looks like a pseudo-differential algebra. So it's an algebra that follows quite easy computation like that. There are fancier ways of doing it, but it's easy to see. And we get the following short exact sequence. So here, if we have our algebra, semi-classical, on any manifold, what can we do? Well, we can define the semi-classical symbol. So the semi-classical symbol of an element A is what? Well, it's the kernel, it's A tilde, at x, z, but we take the Fourier transform, so this is zeta. So the Fourier transform here is z goes to zeta. Now, so this takes care of the density factor. The Fourier transform is well-defined because the density factor exactly turns it into a function. So actually, the semi-classical symbol maps us into Schwarz functions canonically on the cotangent bundle of x. So you have to think about this for a while, but this is canonically a function on the cotangent bundle of x. So this is a well-defined map, and the null space is exactly smoothing semi-classical operators with an additional factor of epsilon out the front. So nothing complicated, just epsilon times a semi-classical operator. This is exact. So I like to be formal about it. It's a short exact sequence, surjective, and so forth, and multiplicative. So it's exact and multiplicative. So this theorem over here, that when you restrict to epsilon equals zero, you get convolution, means that when you take a product here, you just are taking the commutative product here. So this is like the simplest possible pseudo-differential algebra, in some sense, which you make up out of almost nothing. And I claim that people have been using it for a very, very long time in many ways. Okay, so let's see, what can we do with this? So of course, quantization, and what the physicist likes to think of as quantization, is this bad map. The symbol map is the good map. Quantization is the bad map, which you have to choose, which is non-multiplicative. Okay, so we can do all sorts of things. So I should say it's coordinate independent. Well, that's almost obvious. But it's so let's just say it's very robust. So I can do all sorts of things to this. You can make it act on sections of a bundle. You can do all those things with no problem.
This is just the usual
Well, right, no, but you have to make a choice. Vile, left, right.
No, right. Well, then it's doing the usual.
Here, of course, you have to do something much worse. You have to choose connections. You have to do whatever you... And it's a very bad map. It's not multiplicative.
No, I realize.
Right. So, of course, it's the star product. Well, except that they're smoothing operators here. They've been talking about them for millions of years, but this is even more trivial.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say something, because I don't want to talk about pseudo-differential operators here too much, let me just add to this picture, but just to show you how you would do pseudo-differential operators and why nothing happens. So here's the diagonal, the full diagonal. I just drew the diagonal at epsilon equals zero. When you blow up the boundary of the diagonal lifts to a very nice manifold. It doesn't change. It's just that it sits in here. Okay? In this near picture, the diagonal doesn't look any different. It just comes up and now meets the middle of this new face. It doesn't meet the old faces you had at all. So if you want to define pseudo-differential operators instead of smoothing operators, as I'm talking about here, all you do is you take your kernels to have exactly the usual pseudo-differential singularity on the diagonal. Everything's smooth up to here, the same epsilon to the minus n. Everything's smooth away from here, and so the conditions are the same. So there's no difference. So you can define pseudo-differential operators the same way. Okay, and then you've got the standard algebra. I mean, if this is not what other people are dealing with, it's because they are assuming less than I'm assuming. So this is a smaller algebra, if anything. I mean, you may allow some growth. I mean, people, in many cases, allow some sort of growth at these faces here. Okay, so what can we do with this? Well, so of course, robust, we can certainly tensor with matrices. If you want, no problem there. You get an algebra over this. You can also formally, as it were, tensor with I'll come back to this later on. In other words, there's no problem with smooth dependence on coefficients. You can make these things act on the fibers of a fibration. You can do anything like that. No, there's no issue here. Everything's well behaved. Okay, so What do we mean by semi-classical quantization? Well, of course, you can't do it. It's not natural. But certainly, if we take a symbol, and let's say it's valued in the n by n matrices, we can turn it into an operator. There exists an operator A here, whose symbol is. So that's just the surjectivity of the symbol map, of course. We can find such an operator. Now, one observation, so the one pseudo-differential operator that I will use is the identity operator. So the identity is, of course, extremely well-behaved, and so it's rather obvious that the identity itself is a semi-classical family. It scales correctly, so it's independent of the parameter, but nevertheless, it's a semi-classical family. Okay, so suppose we have such an operator. We can think of identity plus A, so this is really 1. The symbol of the identity is 1. And so this, in a matricial sense, we can send to identity plus A. Okay, so let's see what happens if we do that. So it's rather clear if we have, if A, for example, let's take it to be compactly supported on the cotangent bundle. Schwartz is fine, valued in the n by n matrices. And identity plus A, so this is the n by n matrix, identity plus A exists. This implies that identity plus A, which you can put an epsilon here, is in G minus infinity of X epsilon small. So if you if your symbol is invertible, then your quantized operator is invertible for small epsilon. So this is immediately clear from the formula here, because if you just take the inverse of the symbol, quantize it, you'll get an operator which inverts the given operator up to an error which is epsilon, but it's easy to see that such a thing is such an error is automatically invertible, identity plus such an error, so this is true. So in other words, we can quantize functions on the cotangent bundle into G minus infinity by this process. Now, of course, this is not well defined. This family is not determined by A, but two choices of quantizations are clearly homotopic. And so this construction gives us the, I would leave that, the semi-classical index. Okay, so this is the semi-classical index map. So what we're doing here, so we start off with a map, which is from C infinity, compact support, X, T star of X, valued in MNC. So if I can put it like this, crudely, so if we take these elements, then we can turn them into elements of G minus infinity of X. Now, I want to do this for fibers on a fibration, So as I said, everything is robust here. So suppose we have a fibration where the typical fiber is some manifold Z. So this, if you like, M is Z cross Y. So these are parameters in a fibration. And we're thinking of doing everything fiber-wise. So if we do this fiber-wise, the usual notation for the fiber-wise cotangent bundle is M mod Y. And here we get M mod Y. So this just means the bundle T star M over Y is the bundle over Y whose typical fiber is the cotangent bundle of the fiber. So all we're doing is the same construction as I did a minute ago, but fiber by fiber, but everything's completely smooth, so there's no problem here. Okay, so this, of course, looks, roughly speaking, like maps from M. So for each point in the base, we get an element of, so you can think of this as looking like Z. That's what the notation is telling you. This looks like maps from Y into smoothing operators on Z. Now, of course, there's a problem, namely, this is not a product, so that's a twisted thing. It's not a product. If this was a product, then this would be an element of K1 of Y. Okay, so this is exactly what I said, G minus infinity here, so I kept this, I hope, is a classifying space for this. Now, quite elementary computation will show you that if you have fibers of a fibration, that despite the fact that the fibers are twisted by the diffeomorphism group of Z, this is still true. So this is still true for any fibration. So it's still true that the homotopy classes of sections of the smoothing operators on the fibers of the fibration still define the K-theory of the base. Now, that's actually elementary. One way of thinking about it is you can think of sort of Kuiper's theorem about Hilbert bundles being trivial. It's much more elementary than that. It's actually quite elementary. In other words, you really sort of think you can just project this onto finite dimensional things and then the twisting doesn't matter. Okay, so this does in fact define a K-class on the base, and this itself defines a K-class on the fiber-wise cotangent bundle. Because this is an n-by-n matrix, n-by-n matrices are sitting inside G minus infinity of X in many different ways, but in many equivalent ways, and so any invertible smooth family of n-by-n matrices does define a K-class. So the claim here is that this is well-defined. So this is the semi-classical index. And the proof that everything is, that this is well defined is rather obvious. It's just the homotopy invariant of the construction. Okay, so, bad luck, Denny. Okay, so what's the Assayer-Singer theorem? So the index theorem that I'm supposed to prove, I've now defined the semi-classical index. So my claim here is that the semi-classical index is equal to the analytic index. So, of course, I have to put an odd here. So I want to convey the following little picture. So Attia and Singer define two indexes. They define an analytic index, which is, in the even cases, done more or less the same as this, except you're quantizing classical pseudo-differential operators. It's more complicated, but similar to this. There's an odd version of it, which is for self-adjoint operators. And they define a topological index, and I'll try and indicate where this comes from. So my claim is, and I want to take another few minutes to try and show you that this is easy. Easy in the sense that if you think about it, it's rather straightforward. It is the original Attia-Singer theorem proof, by the way. It's just that it's a lot easier here. There's almost no work involved. And this is a deformation argument. So this doesn't involve any topology over here, the equality over there. And so what I'm trying to suggest is putting this rather simple semi-classical index map in the middle makes the Attia-Singer theorem, which is the equality of these two maps, odd or even, doesn't matter, makes it easier to deal with. So let me show you the proof of the Attia-Singer theorem. So why is it relatively easy? Well, as I've shown you, I mean, this construction is very simple. All we're doing is just choosing an operator with a given symbol. It's a smoothing operator. Smoothing operators are very easy to manipulate. And so one of the properties, let me just list a couple of properties. One is, so everything is fine if X is non-compact. Everything works fine if every manifold is non-compact. All you have to do is take compact supports. So nothing goes wrong. If the fibers are compact, if the non-compact, or the base is non-compact. Most importantly, quantization commutes with anything reasonable. So here I've been talking about a fibration. So the Atiyah-Singer map here, in this odd form that I've described it, is for a fibration of manifolds. Maybe we're interested basically in the compact case, but as is well known, you somehow can't stick to the compact case. The theorem that's rather easy to see is, suppose we have a tower of fibrations. So here we have M big, and we have a tower of fibrations. So this is, it's not a double vibration. The term double vibration was unfortunately stolen for something unrelated to this. So this is a much inferior. So you might think this is a bit uncommon, but of course it's not. In other words, if you've got a vector bundle over M, for example, then this is already a tower of vibrations. So we have three maps here. We have an index here, an index here, and an index here. And if you think about it for a minute, you'll see that the result of pushing this forward, so we have to be a little bit careful. I mean, you have to think about going to the cotangent bundle to the cotangent bundle. But if you start off with the cotangent bundle up here, the map you'll be doing here is for the cotangent bundle. So we get an induced map from the cotangent bundle up here over okay. So let me not try and do it. So there's an induced map on the cotangent vibrations here, which is what we should be thinking about here. So this is a T-star. Sorry? No, but I have to do the twisted version. I'm just warming up here. And so, I mean, so you have to interpret this correctly. It's not this vibration. It's the induced vibration for the cotangent bundle here, if you think about it for a minute. But on this side, we're starting off with smoothing with operators valued in matrices. It would be perfectly okay if we started off here with things valued in smoothing operators. It's just smooth. It doesn't make any difference. As I said, it's robust to that extent. And on the right-hand side, what we're getting is the same thing as we started off with. And therefore, this composite makes perfectly good sense. Not here, but through the cotangent bundle here. So this is the T-star version here. So this commutes. And that is, as it were, easy. In other words, if you do it, you're just getting two different versions of the quantization map. So it's not hard. This is just an elementary observation. And so this is actually the main problem in the Atiyah-Singer, in the proof of the Atiyah-Singer theorem. This part. So this is excision, and this is the embedding. So this allows you to do the embedding proof in, which I'm not going to try and recall, in Atiyah-Singer theorem. The embedding proof, pushing the index through this map, and then using the Tom isomorphism, follows essentially from combining these two facts in an elementary way. So this is basically the proof that the topological index is equal to the semi-classical index. The hard part in doing this is to define the topological index. And it's not hard. Okay, so my claim is that that is elementary. I was going to give you a hint of this part here, because obviously having this is not a separate theorem if you don't know that it's the same, because we really are interested in differential and pseudo-differential operators. This deformation basically simply involves taking the semi-classical quantization of pseudo-differential operators, combining the standard construction with this construction, and showing that you can do homotopy from here to here. Okay. So it's not... So I wanted to finish early. So let me say, what's the point of having such a construction which is simpler. Well, one point is that you can try and prove the theorem in a graduate course, which I just failed to do, but it should be possible. Okay, so of course, an easy proof, and I claim this is conceptually easy, allows generalization. So now let me define twisted case theory. Well, I'm only going to do twisted K1. K1 is much easier than K0. K0 has all these bothersome vector bundles in it. So as I say, this is independent of the manifold, and there are plenty of other ways of thinking about what this thing on the right-hand side is. If you are analytically challenged and can't handle smooth things, then you can pass to continuous things. And so, for example, you can replace this by the space of operators, which are identity plus compact and invertible, where compact is the compact operators on a Hilbert space. So if you like, if you close this thing up in bounded operators on L2, you get identity plus compact operators, which are invertible. And that's also a classifying space. Well, of course it is, because it's dense, and so you actually doesn't make any difference. So this is the usual way of thinking about it. I should point out that one of the reasons for doing this thing smoothly is that you can write down churn characters everywhere I've indicated here immediately. If you do this, you can't. Okay, so twisted K-theory consists, there are plenty of different notions of twisting, consists in replacing this by something more complicated. And so it's the following idea. So this is, as I say, what I'm talking about. The theorem I'm talking about here is with Matai and Singer. So I'm now, if no one's completely lost, I'm now here somewhere. So, of course, there's Kuiper's theorem, which is not necessary for here. But it says Hilbert bundles, are trivial. So it says, of course, that the unitary group on a Hilbert space is contractible in the uniform norm. And so this means that Hilbert bundles are automatically trivial. So if you take compact operators on where this is acting on a different Hilbert space, you don't get anything different. But nevertheless, you can think of the following problem. So let's suppose we have a bundle over a manifold where B is a bundle. So let's just say it's just topological here, so I'm not demanding any smoothness. The fiber of B at every point is isomorphic to K. So it's isomorphic to the compact operators on a Hilbert space. And this is multiplicative. So this is a bundle of algebras. So at each point. And this is locally trivial. Okay, so you have a bundle of algebras where the algebras are, in fact, the compact operators on a Hilbert space, point-wise, but the thing can be globally twisted. At least you're not excluding global twisting. So the first question is such a thing trivial? In other words, is it indeed just the bundle of compact operators on a Hilbert bundle? And the answer is, it's not in general. So this is an Asimov bundle. So not in general trivial. So we can identify two bundles, so we can identify them if we have, you might say, there's a multiplicative identification, That's a little too restrictive. You don't want a multiplicative identification. You want to say a stable multiplicative generalization identification. So you allow yourself to tensor with the compact operators. This is still k tensor k's, so this is a completed tensor product. It's really the same thing. So there's a natural notion of identification, so which you can write down. And so then there's the theorem, which I'm not actually quite sure who it was originally due to, perhaps. Not Asimov, I'm pretty sure of that. I think perhaps Doherty. So there's a theorem. Let's just attribute it, perhaps, since no one here will mind. So that if we take the Asimov bundles over Y, and we identify them in this sense. So we identify two when you can find a multiplicative identification like this, then this is, in fact, H3 of the manifold with integral coefficients. And so this invariant here, this, of course, is called a Dixmier-Duhaday invariant. And this is not too hard to understand, but I really perhaps don't want to take the time to do it. So there are indeed non-trivial ones. There are plenty of non-trivial ones. It's even so if our Dixmier-Duhaday class is in the torsion part of the three-dimensional integral cohomology. So this, of course, is why this is related to gerbs immediately. Somehow these are the three-dimensional versions of line bundles already in some form or other. If we take a torsion element, an element such that k delta is equal to 0 for some integer k, then this implies that B can be taken to be finite dimensional. In fact, it's equivalent to that. So if the Dixmier-Duhaday class is finite, is torsion, then there is a representative which is finite rank. So this is one reason, of course, why you need this, otherwise it wouldn't make sense. So in other words, just because a bundle looks like HOM of a vector bundle, it doesn't have to be HOM of a vector bundle. It can have, so this is a bundle with a multiplicative structure which is just the n by n matrices pointwise, but nevertheless it's globally twisted, which stops it being homomorphism bundle. So in the finite dimensional case, this identification would say that B tensored with HOM of a vector bundle is isomorphic to B primed. So in this picture, the homomorphism bundles of vector bundles are automatically trivial. Okay, so there are non-trivial, and so this twists the three-dimensional twisting of the inherent here. Okay, so twisted K-theory is then obvious thing. So we have to be a little bit careful here, the three twisted K-theory. So there's a little problem here. You would like to put delta in there is equal to the homotopy classes of maps from Y into, identity plus B tensored K invertible. So this is the analog of our G minus infinity. So we have to look at families where they're map into B, you have to allow some sort of arbitrary vector bundle coefficients, and then invertible, homotopy classes of those. This is the three-dimensional twisted cohomology. You have to be twisted K-theory. You have to be a little bit careful, because this the object on the left-hand side does not quite only depend on delta. So two different choices of B with the same delta will give you isomorphic spaces here, but not canonically isomorphic. So you have to be a little bit careful. There's sort of a line bundle problem in the identification. So once you know about this, you can more or less forget about it. So you'll get the same space, but the identification is not natural. Okay, so I should just finish by saying, well, we can do this, can do everything. So really, there's, you know, from this point of view, I mean, there's only work to be done. We want to take a map. So what do I mean by this? So here we have a fibration. So we have to be a little bit careful. Here we have a fibration. The twisting class is supposed to be down here. We can't twist the fibers. And you really take a as a Meyer bundle with Dixmier-Duoday class equal to a given delta. So the twisting class is down here. Of course, once you lift this twisting class up here, it may be more trivial. I mean, so it could be trivial up here. Its triviality class can change. So the claim is that we then have a map from the twisted K theory of the fiberwise cotangent bundle, twisted by, if you like, the pullback as a Meyer bundle, see, mapped down. And so this is even odd into K. I've talked about the even case. So here we have, I claim, three maps. And the theorem is that they're all the same. So these three maps are the semi-classical quantization defined essentially exactly as I've done here, because of the robustness of the construction. Making all the maps have values in this additional algebra doesn't affect anything seriously in the discussion. You have to be a bit careful. There's an unpleasantness, which is that it's not known that every Asimov bundle has a smooth representative, which is rather unfortunate. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter here, because the non-smoothness is in Y and not in the fibers, and so it's okay. But it is something to be aware of. It's an open question, actually, whether there's a smooth representative. But we can just carry through the construction here. Now, of course, the hard part is much more to carry through the standard Atiyah-Singer construction to define this map, the analytic map. So this is Atiyah-Singer generalized. This is Atiyah-Singer generalized. And this is the semi-classical. What I claim is that the semi-classical quantization map is not really any harder than what I've described. The topological map is not much harder. This equality is not much harder than what I've described. And in some sense, the hard work is to identify the semi-classical with the analytic. It's not that hard anyway. It's the same as this, but you're dealing with infinite rank bundles, and so you have to pause a little bit. I shall pause. Thank you. Why it makes sense? Sorry?
Why the embedding?
Ah, well, of course you couldn't, because I hardly said anything. So, I mean, the usual proof of Atiyah-Singer, I should have said something else, by the way, but let me try and say that at the end. So the usual proof of Atiyah-Singer is to embed M in a big Euclidean space. You embed the fibration in the Euclidean space across the base, and so you have the following picture. You have your manifold sitting inside another manifold, which in fact in this case is Euclidean space. So you have your compact manifold sitting inside some Euclidean space. And what you've got is you've got a class in the standard Atiyah-Singer theorem. You've got a pseudo-differential operator. I mean, this is really the fibers of an individual fiber of a fibration. You've got a pseudo-differential operator on here. In this picture, what we've got is a smoothing operator on here. And so in the standard Atiyah-Singer argument, what you want to do is you want to construct an operator on the whole space which has the same index. Not only that, but you could do that by just declaring you had one, but you have to know how its symbol is related to the symbol of the one that you had before. Now, what that, the way you do that is in two steps. First, you use the Collin neighborhood theorem to identify a neighborhood of M in the larger manifold with the normal bundle to M over M. Okay? So, and when this is a vector bundle, so in the case that this is a vector bundle, this is an isomorphism. So if this is a vector bundle over M, this is the Thom isomorphism, and there's a natural Both element here. So in this case, in fact, there's a unique K-theoretic way of extending a class here to a compactly supported class here, supported in this neighborhood. The hard part in the Atiyah-Singer argument is exactly the fact that a pseudo-differential operator here times a pseudo-differential operator there is not a pseudo-differential operator. And so you've got to do something. There's actually two problems. The other one is proving that they have the same index. Both of them are a pain in the Atiyah-Singer. So in the Atiyah-Singer, they use the ON equivariant theorem to prove the equality of the index, which is just, you know, appalling. But it, of course, it's Atiyah. It's brilliant as well. And on the other hand, in order to prove the index to prove the index is the same, to get from the product of a pseudo-differential operator and a pseudo-differential operator to a pseudo-differential operator, they have to close everything up in the C-star algebra, deform in a way. So you pass out of the smooth category into the C-star closure and deform in an explicit way. The tensor product of smoothing operators and smoothing operators, actually a better way of thinking about it here is the tensor product of a smoothing operator with a vector bundle of compact support there immediately gives you a smoothing operator compactly supported in this region. And the fact that the index is the same is elementary. So these theorems are, it's just the Thom isomorphism, it's quite elementary. Then this theorem here is, of course, excision, which allows you to extend the thing into the whole space. Then you apply the Thom isomorphism, and that's the definition of the topological index. So the other thing I wanted to say, by the way, as I was reminded of it, is that there's some close relationship between the semi-classical map and I meant to mention this, but I got carried away as usual. Cons Higson had something in the C-star category, which is called asymptotic morphisms. And it's closely related to this. That's in the 80s. This is, in some sense, even more closely related to Fedosov's algebraic index theorem. In fact, the way I would describe the proof that I'm just giving you here is that it allows you to do a complete homotopy between this proof, and the Atiyah-Singer proof. Somehow, you can see they're all the same. Ah. Well, yeah, indeed. How about the equivariant version? as you know, the problem is, I guess I don't know how to do it. And the problem is, of course, that you want to do, I think the equivalent of the elliptic one wouldn't be a problem. It's the transversality, the transversal ellipticity, which is the problem in the G equivariant theorem. So I think it's probably true. In other words, I suspect you can do it what you have to think about here is your interesting object. If G is acting on M, your interesting object is this, and your K theory is going from here. If you want to get smoothing operators, you somehow have to extend the smoothing operator. So you really got a symbol defined on here. In order to get a semi-classical quantization, you have to extend it off there. My belief is that the class that Kasparov wrote down in those lecture notes that you kindly sent to me allows you to extend a smoothing operator off the normal bundle to the G action into the ambient space in such a way that if you quantize it and then write down a version of the standard index formula, to get the character, you will get a semi-classical quantization. If that's true, then I think you can prove the Berlin-Vernier theorem almost as easily as this theorem, if that's true. But I don't know that it's true. Thank you.